Twofootedtackle.com.
Welcome to the Two Footed Tackle podcast, where we've more thrills, spills and belly aches than Gazza's curry last night. The Premier League tries to claw back excitement momentum from the Bundesliga by having all the big teams fail in the same weekend. We'll also be looking at the Champions League, the FA Cup and the MLS in this week's Two Footed Tackle podcast. Oh yes indeed. Yes, hello and welcome to the Two Footed Tackle podcast with me, Gary Andrews, and in a topsy-turvy week of football, a man who remains a steady constant on the pod, Mr. Chris Nee. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm cooling down because we walked into the studio and it was like an oven in here.
It was.
So if you can hear some kind of strange noise in the background, I think that's the air conditioning.
Yeah, we should turn it off, really.
Yeah, at some point. You'll just have to live with it because otherwise we would literally be roasting, be sauna sweaty men, and frankly, nobody really wants us to be talking about that kind of thing on the
true.
Pod.
Actually, following on from your BVB shirt that you wore the other week, which was commented on, and we have to point out your T-shirt.
Well, I wasn't planning on wearing it. I had it underneath my jumper. What's so special about my T-shirt?
Your T-shirt, very funnily, says Wok and Worrell. Wok and Roll, I would say that.
Wok and Woll.
Wok and Woll.
Wok and Woll.
And my local Chinese restaurant now is called Wok Star.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that named by Roy Hodgson?
Quite possibly, yes.
Right, okay. Joining us this week is a man so unfazed by his pod debut that he was willing to take up my offer of adding a section on existentialist philosophy into part three of the pod. West Ham fan Lee Harvey. Hi, Lee.
Good evening, Gary.
Excellent. I see you've got your notes on Kierkegaard prepared.
Well, you know.
And Sartre as well. Wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's a tad nervous, though. You know, it's very daunting, this.
You are. You said your nerves were steel earlier. And
well,
then,
you know, I like to, you know, convey myself as a confident man, but I'm never really that confident.
We're not that scary. We look after our guests. It's only when you get Chris Nee on Harry Redknapp. Premier League. Yes, indeed. Premier League, recent week in there. We've neglected it in recent weeks, it has to be said, for good cause. But, wow, Chris, it got very, very interesting this weekend, especially if you're a West Brom fan.
Bit nervous if you're a West Brom fan as well.
They must be in dreamland. Six in the table, just defeated Arsenal, and defeated Arsenal well.
They did, yeah. It was a very impressive performance to get into that lead that they had, and deserved as well from what I've heard of people who saw the whole game. Obviously, the coming back to 3-2 makes things a little bit nervous for them. But judging by the highlights and from what I've heard from Arsenal fans that were at the game, it was a deserved 3 points.
And Arsenal, I mean, when Wenger loses to lesser teams, you normally get the excuses trotted out, sometimes justifiably, that their team has been targeted physically. That's not West Brom style, you've got to say. That's a very good win.
It was a really good win, and Odin Wing is really settling in quite nicely. I thought Jerome Thomas had a fantastic game on Saturday as well. I think he got a goal and an assist, didn't he? And it was just absolutely tore Arsenal apart. Arsene Wenger talks about character quite a lot over the last couple of seasons, and I guess they showed some of that to get back to 3-2. But it was just one of those days for them, and they'll probably do that a few times this season. But I think generally Arsenal are going to do pretty well.
How about the Baggies, though? Do you think that they can contain this momentum? Because they've won three in a row now. They are up there in that top half of the table. A lot of people's tips for relegation. Do you think they might now have finally got what it takes to stop being that yo-yo team?
I think looking at them this season, just watching how they've been playing and the big players stepping up and doing their bit, I would say that they're probably going to stay up. I certainly can't see them finishing down with the likes of what are sadly going to be probably Blackpool. I think they'll probably do okay. I don't think they'll finish top half or anything, but I can't see them being under too much threat come May.
Of course, another big result this week, Lee, was Chelsea losing their first game. They looked invincible up to Saturday, and then Manchester City, who've got a habit of beating Chelsea in recent seasons.
In recent years, Tevez has been their real fall in their side. Keeps on scoring goals against them, keeps on nicking wins. They certainly deserved their win on Saturday as well. I don't think Chelsea really had a decent chance. I think they might hit the bar in the first half. I think it was a header from a corner, but other than that, I thought City well deserved their victory.
Do you think that's Chelsea's kind of bandwagon of good wins, expansive wins, halted because they've been sticking a lot of goals past, admittedly not particularly good teams? Do you think that shows that actually it's not going to be as easy, or is this just a blip for Chelsea?
I have as much as I hate to admit it, being a West Ham fan, I think it's just a blip. I think they've struggled against teams like Man City and Man United and Tottenham away from home. But I don't think they'll lose many points when they're taking on the lesser teams or the middle teams. While I can see people like Man United, Man City, Arsenal and so on and so forth dropping points against those sort of teams, like Arsenal did against West Brom at the weekend.
What about Manchester City? What do you think that victory means to them?
I think it means to them that they're going to be a top four club this season. That's for sure. They're definitely... they're probably not good enough for the championship this season because they're not experienced enough to beat the lesser teams away from home, like they found out against Sunderland not long back. But in terms of this season, I could definitely see them being top four. They've got far too strong enough squad not to be, to be honest. They've got such strength in depth. For example, Adam Johnson, who's been fantastic for Man City since he's been signed for, can't even get in the team at the moment because of David Silva and so on. So I think they'll be, you know, top four this season, definitely.
We're just going through the big teams and the results have slipped up. I mean, Chris, Bolton, very, very good draw. Manchester United. Manchester United just don't seem to quite be clicking this season.
No, they just haven't quite got out of second gear, have they? Bolton obviously played pretty well. I would say Martin Petrov had a decent game. Saturday night doesn't score too many goals, does he? But he likes to score against the big clubs. He scored against Chelsea and Arsenal for us. So he likes those big goals. And then Michael Owen at the end, popping up with a little header.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think they're still suffering from the fact that they have an unfit and not really mentally prepared Rooney? I know it's the kind of classic thing of saying, well, you know, that's why Manchester United aren't functioning well. But surely they've got to be more than just a one-player team.
Yeah, I mean, it suggests to me that it can't just be down to Rooney, because they shouldn't be. They have good enough players to not be a one-man team. And, you know, despite that, over the years, there have been signs that perhaps they have been with Ronaldo and then subsequently with Rooney. But I think there's probably more to it than that, because I don't think Alex Ferguson would allow that to have such a detrimental effect on the team.
Well, again, let's carry on with the bigger name teams. And Lee, have you ever seen a decision like the led to Liverpool's first goal at Anfield?
I was discussing this with a few mates actually the other day. There's been a few decisions like that, or attempts decisions like that. I remember quite well Paolo Di Canio away in the FA Cup fourth round tie actually against Man United, and Barthez putting his hand up claiming for offside and him tucking it away. But I've never seen something quite like that, the pass back of a free kick and then just running through. I think it should have been allowed, to be honest, because it was a very silly thing to do, because there's always liability that the ref's just going to give that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I think you could probably say, because I actually agree with you, and a lot of people have piled in Stuart Atwell, the only thing I think you could possibly say was he wasn't looking when the ball was actually kicked. Do you think that makes a difference or not? Or if the ball's kicked, does that make it active again?
I don't think he meant to take the free kick. I honestly thought he was knocking it back to the goalkeeper, but because he touched the ball, because he did it in that manner, he's left himself open for the goal to be allowed. You know, it was a silly thing to do from his thing. I know Steve Bruce was up in arms after the game about it, but I'd be having to go at the defender, to be honest, for switching off and doing such a silly thing.
Sunderland did come back, and it required a late Liverpool goal again. They're stuttering. I mean, you look, they're 16th in the table. They really haven't got going, have they, Liverpool?
Their squad's not good enough. They've replaced players that have left in recent seasons with sort of, I suppose, semi versions of him. I don't think Christian Poulsen is a particularly great player. I think he's a good player, but he's not a particularly great player. Melares will probably look decent more time when he gets fitness to go. Obviously, Aquilani came in last season and was no shakes and got sent on loan again back to Italy. I think they haven't got a good enough squad to be up there with the likes of Man City and Tottenham and obviously Man United and so on. I think it's strictly mid-table and back to the early 90s of Liverpool at the moment under Roy Evans was back as a manager then.
Coincidence, two Roys, we think not. Liverpool fans, you might want to tune in next week. We've got Sam Court and Chris White in the studio who'll be giving their take on it.
They're somewhat no doubt contrasting opinions.
Yes, indeed. I've already had Chris email me with basically the rough gist of what he's going to be ranting about. Regardless, so that's
nice to flag it up before.
Yeah, absolutely. Not such the big team. I'll come to Spurs in a minute because I think there's a man in the studio who wants to speak to it. But Villa, good win against Wolves, you've got to say.
Great win. Very, very happy with that. It's a fixture that traditionally has been quite kind to us, but we really struggled in last season. And to go there and be looking like we were going to do the exact same thing, go in the lead, let them claw it back, and then go home with just a point. And to pop up with the late goal was fantastic, particularly as it was set up by Steve Warlock, who shouldn't have been on the pitch. And then Mark Halsey owes us several, so we'll just chalk that up to one of those.
Obviously, early days as well for Julio. But who is this new young scoring sensation they've discovered in Emil Heskey?
Yeah, I've never seen someone jump for a header quite so emphatically. Julio seems to get the best out of him. He's had a great start under him. Whether that is going to continue is up for debate. But if he's scoring goals, then he's finally going to win over some Villa supporters.
To Upton Park.
About time too.
Yeah. If you're going to break your duck for the season, probably no better way for West Ham to do it than against Spurs.
Certainly not from our point of view, that's for sure. It's been a while coming. Last time we beat them was a certain Lasagna Gate when Yossi Benayoun scored a lovely winning goal to knock them from stopping getting the Champions League, which was a lovely memory to have. But we played fantastically on Saturday. We far deserved the result. Second half, Tottenham got back into the game. Van der Vaart was running the show for about 10-15 minutes, and then Redknapp decided to take him off. Nice for him. They died pretty much a death after that. There wasn't many things going forward. They had a lot of the ball, but we defended well. Manuel da Costa at centre half was amazing. He won every single header in the air, and I can't believe he wasn't starting the season for us. It was inexplicable that we were playing Tompkins and Upson, and we've tried Gabadon and Upson there. We tried Reed and Upson. We tried everyone else other than da Costa, and he was our best player towards the end of last season. So I'm chuffed he's in, and now Picky on, though he won't get you 10-15 goals a season, he runs his nuts off up front, and he's just such a hard worker, and he's a handful for teams. He causes problems, and we've got Abina now, who come in from Inter Milan on loan, and he's looked like a real good player as well. We can cause teams troubles going forward now. We've got Barrera on the wing, and Dyer, though he went off, not injured, but with the flu again on Saturday. He's looking like he's getting back to the sort of play he was maybe 3-4 years ago, you know, with a bit of pace about him. We're starting to come around now.
Okay. I reckon you've played 9 defenders in the Premier League this season.
We haven't. This is like the 8th or 9th game in a row we've played a different back four.
Is that part of the problem? That's including
the League Cup as well. Pardon?
That part of the problem?
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. Even last season, we couldn't get a settled back four all the time, chopping and changing. We tried Jonathan Spector at left back, and that was never going to work in a million years. But we finally seem to get when we get a settled back four, and this is Zola's first season for us. We finished 9th in the Premier League, and we had a settled back four towards the end of that season. And we looked good and we looked solid. Chopping and changing never worked, and we need a settled back four, and that's what we got now. I wouldn't even bring back Alunga when he's fit. I'd keep Gabadon at left back, because he's even though he's not naturally left footed, he can deal with the pacey wingers. He kept Aaron Lennon very quiet on Saturday. And I've got to mention Robert Green's fantastic save from Luka Modric. Mm. It was at world class. I sit just behind the goal in the Bob Moore Lower at West Ham, and when he saved it, I just almost couldn't believe he saved it.
It was a superb save, and he milked it, didn't he?
He did after the game. He gave a bit to the press box, but well deserved as well, because I think the pressure had been very, very harsh towards him. You don't become England's number one, and then one mistake, you turn into a rubbish goalkeeper all of a sudden.
He's had a lot of bad luck so far this season as well. Yeah. It hasn't all been down to him. So I personally don't think they should have been charging him.
No, they haven't charged him.
They're not.
No, they've turned around and said, well, the press started going that the FA would... thinking about charging him, and the FA came out and said we're not going to charge him, and I was
good
a bit like, well, yeah, why would you charge him anyway? Not like he'd done anything wrong.
We'll be coming back to a bit more of West Ham just a little bit later in the half, but a quick question about Spurs. They're very inconsistent this season, aren't they? I thought at the start of the season the European campaign might cause them a few problems in the league. Looks like that's the case.
I would agree as well, especially after last night when they went all guns blazing against FD20. It shouldn't have been the result it was, 4-1, but they definitely deserve to win. But they definitely, I think they're going to find it tougher this season. I can't see them finishing the top four. I think they'll be fifth or sixth, probably fifth, but because they've got a good squad. But you know, they get a few injuries, and now he's like, oh, we're down to the bare bones again. So I don't think they're going to be quite as consistent as they were last season.
Mm. I'll rip through a few of the other results, have a quick look ahead to the big fixtures at the weekend as well, and then we'll get back a little bit to the Hammers. But Chris, Everton, bottom of the league. Wow, what's going on there? I mean, we know they don't start well, do they?
They don't, and it doesn't seem to be exclusively down to these injuries that they seem to have. They have obviously got a lot of injury-prone players there still. They're really missing a proper goal scorer, aren't they? Really badly. And Jermaine Beckford just isn't the answer to that problem. But then they've got a nailed-on win on Saturday, hopefully. So we'll see.
Well, Birmingham.
I'm joking. They're clearly going to lose that game.
But Birmingham drawing 0-0 with Wigan. They're preserving that very, very long, year-long unbeaten run at home now, although not in the most glamorous of circumstances.
Was it Villa that beat them last at home?
Might very well
be. It can't be far off, because we're coming up to the anniversary of that game, shortly.
I wonder
if it is. Anyway, yes, congratulations to them.
Well-informed pod.
Yes, their home form has been absolutely incredible, and deservedly so, because they are really difficult to break down these days, and it's not all just through defending for 90 minutes, although they do sit back quite a lot. And it's going to be a very, very difficult game for Everton, because they don't seem to have the keys to unlock teams like Birmingham at the moment.
And let's very briefly look ahead to the fixtures at the weekend, and then a very quick bit on West Ham as well. Chelsea-Arsenal. Lee, big game for both sides, you got to say.
I'd say a big game for Arsenal, because I think Chelsea can get away with losing to Man City away. Man City are obviously going to be tough for any team to go away to, and that's always going to be a difficult game. But Arsenal, obviously, after coming off the back off a 3-2 loss to West Brom, and not a particularly great performance against Partizan Belgrade last night, you know, it wasn't great. I think Arsenal, if they're going to show their proper championship contenders this season, they've got to go there and get at least a point.
Villa have got Spurs. Chris, are you hoping for another European hangover at the White Hart Lane?
Yes, I am hoping, because otherwise we're going to find it pretty tough. I think having exerted themselves in midweek, it will probably give us more of a chance. I think it's going to be very difficult. We quite often go there and get a point or three, but Spurs and Villa aren't really on the same level at the moment, and it's going to take some magic from someone in our ranks to get a win there.
And Chris, one fascinating fixture, potentially, Liverpool-Blackpool.
Yeah. Are you thinking upset?
I am thinking upset. I think it's distinctly possible.
I can't see it. I think that it will be scraped, and I think it will be difficult, and it will be close, but Liverpool win.
I hope it will. I hope it'll be an upset for Blackpool. Nothing against Liverpool per se, but I just think it'd be nice.
Typical London media, Gary.
What?
Anti-Liverpool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anti-Liverpool for
London media.
Watch the emails flooding.
So, West Ham have got Fulham. Another London derby for them. Fulham have been quite difficult to break down this season. Do you think West Ham have got what it takes?
I think we've certainly got the players to cause them a lot of trouble at the back. If we play that, this is what we were saying after the game on Saturday. We've got to exert ourselves the same way as we do against Tottenham, as we did against Tottenham against Fulham. We can't just go there and think, oh, it's Fulham, we'll turn up and get a win, like we have done before. Like last season, we were 1-0 up at half time, they were down to 10 men, and we ended up having to score a last minute equaliser to get a 2-2 draw at the game. It's going to be a tough game. Fulham's always tough. They're a very well organised team, and Mark Hughes has got them very organised. I think we might be able to get a result because of the lack of Zamora and Dembele up front. They're going to lack firepower, but no, West Ham will somehow manage to muck it up. But they're going to lack firepower, so when we stick it at the back, we can cause some trouble.
Question from Ian Walsh. Have West Ham got out of the hole? Whether that's the hole that you're talking in at the bottom of the league, or West Ham's owner's hole from their business. I don't know which one Ian's referring to. Let's assume, for taste and decency purposes, that it is football.
We haven't got the hole yet, because we're still in the bottom three and we've only won one game, but we're certainly looking up now. It's been a much more positive atmosphere around the club. You look at all the message boards and so on and so forth. People are a lot more looking forward to this weekend's game, and I think the real turning point was Stoke City away. We went there and we got a good point, and Stoke are very hard to get results out of away from home. And that was a turn, and then we played some great football. I didn't see it myself. Sunderland away in the League Cup. And I think if we can get a result on Saturday, then I would say we're out of the hole. I think we got a too good enough squad, he says that, touch wood, that to go down. I think there's poorer teams in this league. I think Wigan, for example, Blackpool definitely. There's a whole host of teams down there. I think even Wolves are no shakes this season. You know, I know they've got two decent forwards up front in Kevin Dorn and Stephen Fletcher, but the rest of the team isn't all that particularly.
Looking at the off-the-pitch thing, what's your take on Golden Sullivan, or Golovan, as we like to call them on the pod?
I personally quite like them, and that's a bit controversial amongst a lot of people. I think that with Golden Sullivan, there's a happy medium. What gets me is that when we had the Icelandics in charge, and through no fault of their own, they ended up losing a lot of their money, and obviously we did, they didn't speak to the press very much. And the fans used to say, oh, why don't they speak to the press very much? Then we get two chairmen who can't shut up in the press, and it's like, why don't they shut up in the press? It's obviously a happy medium. But I think they're honestly there for the right reasons. I don't think they're not. I don't think they're saying the West Ham fans for the sake of the saying West Ham fans. I certainly think Gold's a big West Ham fan. Sullivan less so, you know what he's like. But even this summer, they did everything they said they were going to do. They kept our best players. They signed Scott Parker to a new 4-year deal, possible 5 years. We bought some good players as well. We didn't spend millions of money because we haven't got millions of money to spend, but we bought solid players in. Like Pereira looks like a good player for £4 million. Picking on for £1 million, I think it's going to be a steal up front. I think he'll get you a good to maybe 8 goals a season, but his contribution will come in a lot more of his workmen, like sort of tendencies. But I think the big contention of the fans at the moment is the whole Olympic Stadium issue,
which I was going to ask you about, because obviously that news seems to have come today that it does look like West Ham are going to go for that Olympic Stadium. How do you feel about that?
I think it totally depends how we sort of. I think I was talking to, because my dad's obviously a West Ham fan, and he knows a lot of Western fans who are much older than me, like in their 40s and 50s, and the majority of them are quite positive towards this, which surprised me. I thought a lot of them want to stay. To move forward as a club and to be as big a club as, say, Sullivan and Gold want us to be, we do need to move to a bigger stadium or increase the stadium at Upton Park, and that's not going to happen because of the school and the infrastructure around the area. It's too inbuilt. It's an estate. It's like that's what it is. It's loads of houses around it. I'm for it, but it has to be done the right way. If we move there, it's going to be a massive stadium for a club our size. 60,000, I think, is too much.
Yeah, I mean, you've sold out a game this season at West Ham.
Fulham is the first game, and that's only gets kids for a quid. And that's what they've got to do at our new, if we do move to Olympic Stadium, we've got to reduce the ticket prices. It's got to come down to, say, Wigan level in terms of like 25 quid. Whether they do it or not, they have said they're going to do it. But if they go through and do that and play kids for a quid quite often, then I think we can fill a good chunk of that. It just depends, you know. I went to the Oxford City game. Oxford City.
Oxford, they've gone up a bit.
Oxford United game in the League Cup a couple of weeks ago, and there's obviously only 13,000 people there. What worries me is we go to this 60,000 seat Olympic Stadium, we play Oxford United on a Tuesday night in the League Cup. How many people are going to turn up, and what's it going to look like?
Having spent a few years with Golden Sullivan in our shadow, I would be staggered if they do anything about ticket prices other than put them up. That is a massive bone of contention with Birmingham supporters and with Villa supporters. When we went to visit them, always there was an issue with ticket pricing.
They put them up this season again. Like, I think our category A+, I think it is, or something similar, like, is, like, I think the highest ticket price is like £75.
That's just the Villa game, right? A+.
Yeah. I think it's Man United at home, actually, not even Tottenham. But and they are too expensive. And they have said if we get an Olympic Stadium, then they will reduce the ticket prices. We wait and see whether it actually happens or not, but hopefully it will, because that's the only way we'll fill the stadium.
Any West Ham fans, do leave your comments on the blog after the podcast or on the Facebook page as well. Love to hear your views on that, but we'll leave that glitz and glamour of part one, the Olympics and all that. Part two is all about the mugs of Bovril on a wet Tuesday night as we talk FA Cup qualifying and the subsequent replays. Welcome back to part two of the Two Footed Tackle podcast, and welcome back to the FA Cup qualifying. Yes, the second qualifying round was last weekend. The replays have already been and gone as well. To talk us through it, we've got Damon from the Real FA Cup blog on the line. Excellent site, do check it out. Damon, where did the romance of the cup take you this weekend?
Hi guys, we went to, I went to Margate against Kingstonian on Saturday and also to the replay on Monday night. I went to Bromley against Bishop Stortford on Tuesday night, and Simon went to Tooting.
Yes, Chris, you were at Tooting.
I don't want to talk about it.
Simon said that he saw you.
Because I don't know anything about it either.
I think it was a rare sight of your partner in crime on the Real FA Cup may have even seen Chris Lee about to walk out of a game early.
I wasn't walking out. I edged towards the gate towards the end of the ground and then watched the last few minutes from sort of with the Staines fans, but I wasn't leaving.
You weren't leaving. What was the score?
It was 4-1 to Staines. And it was pretty solidly deserved as well. It was not particularly close game. Tooting didn't really get out of the blocks, and Staines were just kind of solid, confident, and went about their business and got it done with a couple of goals from Jacob Walcott.
Yes, cousin of Theo.
Cousin of Theo, and the second one was a lovely little volleyed lob over Jamie Butler. It was a cracking goal.
Lovely stuff. But yeah, Damon, it sounded like you chose some very good games to go to, especially the Margate Kingstonian game.
Yes, the first game wasn't the best. It wasn't a bad game, but it was pretty even and always looked like being a draw all the way through. But the replay, different matter. The Kingstonian fans, particularly behind the goal, 80 to 100 of them, I reckon, were going absolutely mental throughout the game and created quite a good atmosphere for such a low crowd, really. But the players helped. And they played their part. It was a pretty good game. Kingstonian were on the whole on top throughout most of the first period, but Margate came into it after they scored their first effort on goal, which was a beautiful free kick. I have to admit, it was probably a shade over 20 yards out, and it was curled by Wayne Wilson over the top of the wall and just in off the underside of the crossbar. It was perfectly weighted. Lovely, lovely goal. And then extra time was pretty even, end-to-end stuff. And then I saw my first live penalty shootout in 30 years of watching football. I can't believe it was my first.
Impressive. And weren't Kingstonians way? Was there plenty of drama in the shootout as well?
Yeah, it was slightly odd, though, because Kingstonian went first and scored, and then subsequent four penalties all hit the back of the net fairly comfortably. And then the next five players all missed, I think all of them were saved, actually. In the final one, Lawrence Hall, I think he was called, for the free kick. It was a pretty decent free kick, but the keeper got his fingertips to it and nudged it onto the post. Key wild scenes.
Fantastic stuff. And I was quite jealous that you were at the Stortford Bromley game, because I thought that one might be a bit of a cracker as well.
Yep, that was also a good game. It was 2-1, and Bishop Stortford were essentially second best for most of the first half, but in the second half they properly gave it a go, as the cliche says, and they had a goal disallowed. They blasted a few over the bar from about 6 yards out and generally had the better of the second half, but then with, I think it was just about heading into injury time, and there was a lovely 1-2 on the edge of Stortford's box, and rifled into the top corner. It couldn't really have been more perfect, and then it was always going to be game over after that. Which is unfortunate, because I was hoping for another penalty shootout.
Hey, you got greedy after the first one.
Oh, yes.
A couple of ones I think I picked out on the blog last week on six picks for the weekend, and I picked out a couple of FA Cup games. I feel slightly vindicated.
I was just listening to that.
I'm not sure that it was you or Simon who advised for Dartford against Lowestoft, but that got 5 stars for entertainment in the non-league paper. Dartford winning that one. So good recommendation from your end. And then there was also Sheffield against Northwich, which went to a replay.
Indeed.
And, wow, you know, great result for Sheffield there as well.
Superb. If I wasn't away in Spain in the next round, that is definitely where I would be heading. I don't think Simon will be heading there. I think they're going to St Albans against Kingstonian, actually.
Yeah. Kingstonian, St Albans, looks like a decent one. You're obviously in Spain, but which ones have... taking your fancy from the next round, would you, if you would have been to one, other than obviously Sheffield as well, Frick the Athletic, St Albans, Kingstonian, but which are the other ones that have caught your eye?
The one that immediately struck my eye when the draw was made was Farnborough, where the visitors are Hamble, I think it's called Hamble Aero Sports and Social Club. And I have to admit, I don't know a great deal about them. In fact, I can't even remember which league they're playing, but I know they are 2, possibly 3 below Farnborough. So that That would probably be the one that I would go to, and if you're in the Farnborough area, it might be worth going down, because on the one hand, you could get a smashing shock, but I suppose it could always be that Farnborough rack up a good number of goals. Either way, you should get some entertainment.
Definitely. Chris, any ones that you've picked out?
Yeah, one I won't be going to is Halifax Harrogate, which I think should be an interesting matchup with those two in close proximity. And my sort of localish left club from where I grew up, Poole Town, are still going, and they're at home to Bashley. So that one is one that I'll be keeping an eye out for.
Mm. Lee, any ones that you've looked on there go, a bit tasty?
Lincoln Morelands Railway against Moseley AFC. What a name that is, Lincoln Morelands Railway. That's a great name for a club.
That's what I love about this level. I quite Norton and Stockton Ancients against FC United of Manchester. That's the stuff we like. One of the teams that you went to, Bromley, they've got Chelmsford City, which also could be a cracker, Damon.
Yeah, that should be a very good game, I would have thought. Bromley did enough in the game that we saw to suggest they're a very good side. One or two very handy players, and obviously Chelmsford same division and also well up the league, so yeah, that could be a pretty good tie.
I mean, there's other ones that I picked out. Dartford, who I mentioned earlier, Canvey Island, they're away to. Yeah, another one which could go either way there. That's, yeah, some great.
Yeah. And I think there's probably Guiseley against Whitley Bay. There's a potential for a little surprise there, I think. Whitley Bay perhaps haven't started the league season so well, but as far as cup competitions go, they're pretty hot over the last few years.
Yeah, concentrate on the cups.
Bars, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. You look down the list now, it starts to get, well, for me, it starts to get very exciting, even more so than the previous rounds, just because you're starting to get those bigger teams, sort of, or the teams that you kind of start seeing maybe creeping into the first round, get there.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, if people want to find out a bit more about your reporting of the Real FA Cup, what's the website that they should visit for you?
It's therealfacup.co.uk. We have a few reports up from the last round, and at some point next week we'll have a small preview up on the games to go to in the third qualifying round.
Fantastic. And if Two for the Tackle listeners aren't convinced already why they should be going to those kind of games, tell them, go on, expound the virtues of why they should be going to a third qualifying round FA Cup game.
Well, I think the main one is that, as you were alluding to earlier, there is some big conference sides coming in the next round. And then there's the possibility of that, you know, if you can beat that conference side, of getting into the first round proper where the League One and Two clubs come in. So you might see a little bit of history, and also it's relatively cheap. I think I'd be surprised if you paid much more than £10 to get into a lot of these games. And as you can see, I think from our match reports, some of the games are actually very entertaining. There's quite a bit of skill on show, and it's just something that people should, I think, give a try, particularly when there is free weekends, international breaks, and campaigns such as Non-League Day. It's definitely worth giving a go.
Absolutely, and that is on the international break weekend. So come on, people, you have got absolutely no excuse. Get yourself down to an FA Cup qualifying game on that weekend. There's some absolute crackers. There's probably one not too far from wherever you are in the UK. Get yourself down and have a look, watch of one of them. Damon, thank you very much, and have a great time in Spain. If you want, you know, Simon going to be texting you the updates from wherever he is?
Yes, either that or I shall be following it on Twitter, yes.
Fantastic, that's brilliant. That's Damon from the Real FA Cup there.
Twofootedtackle.com.
Lee, we were just talking when we took a quick break after speaking to Damon. You've actually played at two of the grounds of the teams who are still in the FA Cup.
I have indeed.
Which ones?
Woking and Hampton and Richmond. Borough, or whatever it is. Yeah, them two. Yeah, Hampton and Richmond, Borough and Woking. One in the League Cup and one against some Germans.
Who were you playing for at the time?
Guildford City, as it goes.
Wow.
I know. Well, Guildford City boys.
In goal.
No, I wasn't in goal. No, not after that, but you saw me in goal. No, I was playing up front, and I scored in the League Cup at Hampton and Richmond Borough, and I scored a penalty against the Germans to win against the Germans on penalties at Woking's ground.
What were you playing, nice. Germans?
They come over, like, yeah, it was at that sort of age. I think I was 16 or something like that, and they come over from Freiburg, actually. They come over, and they come over, and you house them and stuff, and you play a game against them, beat them on penalties. I remember going into the change room, and I forget who the manager at Woking at the time was, but he had all the tactics still all over the wall and stuff like that, and lots of clippings and stuff like that, and some profanities underneath the clippings.
Wonderful stuff. I got that. Were you playing there at the time when they had that weird stand, or is that a bit after your time where you've got like one huge stand?
Yeah, that was there. That was there.
And nothing else.
The problem was there was no all the parents and all the people there were sitting in the sort of terracing sort of seating area, and that stand had no one in there. So whenever the ball went over the bar or wide, it went into that big stand, and we could never get it back. We had to went for a lot of balls that game.
Fantastic. See, this is the kind of proper grassroots anecdote you don't get on any other podcast. And what don't you get on any other podcast? Well, you do on some, but not all. MLS. Chris, what's new?
Well, the playoffs are beginning to take shape now, finally. We have the official kind of launch of the single table with a small S and small T. And it's now becoming very clear that I think most of the playoff places, if not all the playoff places, are now pretty much nailed on.
I guess Kansas City, Wizards and Toronto are the two that possibly could, at the expense of either the Earthquakes or the Sounders. And how did both Toronto and Kansas City get on last week?
Well, Kansas City were beaten by Dallas after the game that we just touched on last week, because I hadn't seen the highlights, where they got a late win, but they were beaten by FC Dallas over the weekend, so not a great progression for them. And Toronto were beaten 3-2 by the Earthquakes. Chris Wondolowski got a hat-trick there to get up to 12 goals for the season. So he's level with Sebastian Letou and behind Edson Buddle and someone else who's just gone out of my head. Oh, Juan Pablo Angel.
Ah, of course. And Juan Pablo Angel, of course, scored in what was probably the bigger game of the week, which was the Red Bulls away to the Galaxy, and the Red Bulls coming away with a 2-0 win.
Yeah, certainly the most hyped game, and the Red Bulls went there without Thierry Henry in the game that could possibly have had five designated players. It started with four, and it was a 2-0 win. It was pretty routine by the looks of it.
Impressive. Galaxy still top of the combined table on points, on 50 points there. You mentioned Sebastian Letou as well. If you go to twofootedtackle.com, you'll see Chris's profile of the Frenchman and why we should be interested in him. And he was on the score sheet as well for the Union.
Yeah, he was 3-0 win over Chivas USA, who are all but out of the playoff race now, and I would imagine that their run comes to an end this weekend. They are quite poor, and they will be playing the Galaxy.
Local derby, though.
Very local, but not particularly well matched.
Various other results as well. Blaise Nkoufu can't stop scoring for the Sounders now. 1-0 win over the Fire.
Yeah, late win over the Fire.
Could say that's extinguished their playoff hopes.
That is terrible.
Yes, you certainly could say that, but they just about kept them alive just with a 3-0 win over the Earthquakes last night.
Absolutely. That probably might have done the Wizards or Toronto a favour as well, that one.
Possibly could have done, yeah. The Earthquakes obviously are one of the few teams that can be caught by, probably more likely to be the Wizards. But yeah, it was a pretty decent result there for Chicago.
After picking up the Crew, our famous curse has struck again. It's still stuttering. The Revs held them to a draw.
Yeah, the Revs slightly developing a bit of a habit of going 2-0 up and then not winning matches. Quite unlucky to concede an own goal against the Crew. And then Guillermo Barashorto from the penalty spot, and he basically is pretty solid from 12 yards. So, 2-2 there, point apiece, and the Crew really are now just cruising into the playoffs.
We're scratching our heads over this one because you didn't actually see why it was so late, but there was a 100th minute goal in DC United against Houston Dynamo.
There was a 100th minute goal by Dominic Aduro, and I didn't quite see on the highlights why that was, and I presume it was an injury, but I can't think who it might have been too. Very, very disappointing result for DC United at home against what is a pretty poor team, one of only three teams alongside DC and the Revs, too, have guaranteed that they won't be in the playoffs this season. Really disappointing season for the Dynamo, and I would have hoped that DC might have picked up at least a point there, but it wasn't to be.
Something bizarre about handshakes in that game as well.
Yeah, the interim coach for DC and the Dynamo coach, Ben Olsen and Dominic Kinnear, they were sent to the stands and they've both been fined for what doesn't appear to have been much of a touchline spat at all, and has been described in some quarters as nothing more than a friendly handshake.
So, it's not just Stuart Atwell who causes controversy in the refereeing circles.
There's everyone in MLS as well. they struggle for refereeing quality slightly.
Looking ahead, we said last week that Toronto really needed to get a win in their last game against the Earthquakes, because the Earthquakes won the teams who could possibly drop out of the playoff spots. They now play the Sounders, who are the other team who you think might drop out. Toronto really have to win this game if they want to stay in, I guess, but tough because they're away.
Yes, very, very difficult game for them. They're not in the best of form. The Earthquakes are in decent shape, but you know, Toronto would have been looking to beat them over the weekend. And I think we could be looking at the end of the road for Toronto there as well. Obviously, they got rid of their coach as what seems to be a bit of a gamble in the short term to try and get a bounce into the playoffs. And long term, there are different issues there as well. But I'm not sure it's going to work for them, because that game against the Quakes was a huge game.
And the Quakes have got Columbus Crew, and they'll be hoping that Crew carry on their slightly stuttering form.
Yeah, well, they're capable of beating them. They are capable, but Crew Stadium is traditionally a pretty difficult place to go. The Crew are reliable. You know, they're probably not going to have many spectacular wins between now and the start of the playoffs, but they're probably not going to lose many games either. So it's a real challenge for the Earthquakes.
Looking through the other ones as well, I mean, the Wizards, again, they need to win, but they've got probably one of the toughest games they could possibly have, which is against the Red Bulls.
Yes, the Red Bulls playing probably in about third gear at the moment, but third gear for the Red Bulls at the moment is very, very decent. And if I were Hans Bucker, I would be looking to keep my players getting the momentum going and picking up the wins on the way into the playoffs, because they are a definite contender for MLS Cup. But if they start to let that form go, we see it in England every year, the teams that go into the playoffs with momentum are the teams that end up being the most successful. So beating the Galaxy was huge for them, and they'll want to continue that.
Two teams that are kind of jostling for position in, well, not in necessarily in the combined table, but in their respective conferences to finish runner-up. Dallas 2 points behind Salt Lake. Dallas have got the Chicago Fire at home, and Salt Lake have got the Revs away. Do you think that's wins for both of those two, or either of, can you see either of them struggling?
Yeah, well, Salt Lake obviously are strongest at home, so they may be susceptible there. But Dallas are now unbeaten in some crazy number of games. It's a long time. I think it might be 16 games since they were last beaten. And after we talked about them last season being so poor, they've had a fantastic year this year. And I think they'll win that match. And if you look at them, they've got more points than any team in the East. So they are absolutely flying.
And Salt Lake as well, we picked them out on six picks last week, or I did at any rate, with their unbeaten home record. They just about preserved it this week against the Rapids.
They did. It took a stoppage time equaliser in the air from Nat Borchers to keep them unbeaten in now 24 MLS games, which is mighty impressive.
Absolutely. Quick mention as well, I don't know if you saw this, but for Chicago Fire... against the Seattle Sounders. That wasn't last... that was last week on the Sunday. I don't know if you saw their wonderful banner that they had, yes, mocking the Sounders.
Yes.
For anybody who hasn't seen it, do look on YouTube. It's brilliant. It's best described as an interactive banner. And it's...
TIFO, as they're called.
TIFO. Mm. You've got Mario at one end, Koopa Troopa at the other. You've got sort of a background at the top and below, and then they move a fireball along, waste a Koopa Troopa, and then Mario hops along. It's absolutely brilliant. I love it because I'm a massive fan of the old Mario games.
Yeah, I should point out that Seattle are effectively Microsoft FC.
Yeah, well, essentially, yeah, and that's hence the banner boundary. Mm. Best banner ever.
Pretty decent. I quite liked the Timbers TIFO against the Sounders in their cup tie last year.
What was that?
I think, if I remember correctly, it was Timber Jim cutting down the Space Needle.
Brilliant. Why don't we have that over here? That's fantastic. Because who says Americans can't do soccer properly? We love that kind of stuff. Okay, part two's time has come. Like a cozy pair of slippers, though, we'll be slipping into part three. It's just around the corner, dear listener. Welcome back. Part three of the Two Footed Tackle podcast. We've got the air conditioning on again because it started getting very, very warm. You're listening with me, Gary Andrews, Chris Nee and Lee Harvey. Let's have a couple of questions. Tim Morgan has asked, Frank Nublé, is he any good?
Is Frank Nublé any good?
Yeah.
Oh, because he's gone to Swansea. That's why Tim's asking that. I was trying to think why he's asking that. He is a carbon copy of Carlton Cole. That is the best way to describe him. He's not great finish. He's very fast. I've given that. He's very strong. He had a good game against Aston Villa, actually, last season, away up top by himself. Did very well. I think Maybe in a few years' time, as long as Swansea play him up front in his normal position, unlike West Brom last season, who stuck him on the wing.
Okay. There we go, Tim. There's your answer. And that leads nicely on to Tom Godfrey's question. With a few youngsters coming through in the Premier League, who's your best, your favourite, or the most likely to succeed? Chris, Villa, obviously very well renowned for their young players.
For having them come through a bit and then stop. Mark Albrighton has set the league alight this season. He's obviously not the finished product just yet. He looks very good, likes to get his head down and run, and his fullback crossing ability looks superb so far, and we've got high hopes for him. Elsewhere in the Villa team, there's not that many. We've got lots that are just not quite in the first team.
Barry Bannon,
yes. Gary Gardner, Nathan Baker. There are a few there, Kieran Clark as well, who just aren't quite in the sort of first team reckoning just yet, but are highly rated. But we've been having loads of players in that category over the last few years, and very few of them make it.
Lee, anybody that you want to pick out, young players, can be West Ham or any other team.
Well, West Ham wise, a bit out of left field, and a bloke hasn't made his Premier League debut. But Marek Stek is a big goalkeeper. He played in the League Cup for us, and he looks like a man mountain. And he's only 20-21, I think. He's about 6'4". He's massively built, I know when he first joined us, he was dubbed the new Peter Cech, and he certainly looks very decent. Commands the area very well. Looks like an experienced goalkeeper at his tender age as well. So I think see him progressing. Other than that, the young lad from Chelsea are coming, Joe McKeldry, wasn't it?
Josh McEachran.
He looks quite good from what I've seen anyway. Only bits and bobs, but obviously he's very highly rated if he's coming off the bench on a semi-regular basis from Chelsea, especially with their squad. And other than that, only thing I can feel West Ham is James Tompkins, who has had a hard time of it recently, but he's definitely got the talent there to be a top centre-half in the Premier League. He just needs to cut out the mistakes, but obviously at his age he's going to make those sort of mistakes.
Mm. Jordan Henderson?
He's almost established, isn't he? I'd also go Man City's fullback they're playing at the moment, whose name is escaping
Boyata,
I think looks a very good prospect there. Him a lot.
Obligatory mention for Jack Wilshere as well, of course.
Yeah, just some kid that Arsenal brought through. In fairness, you could probably just look at Arsenal's reserves and young kids, and you could probably pick a handful from there quite easily. It'd be interesting to hear if J. Emmanuel Thomas gets anything this season.
Is he on loan to the Championship at all? I'm not sure.
Ooh, that's a good question. We'll check that out next week. We have such fountains of football knowledge, a little bit slippery.
A question for Tim Morgan to come back for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
A revenge question.
Or Natasha when she comes in for her stint on the pod in a few weeks' time. Okay, let's get down to a few other things. Actually, I just want to mention very, very quickly. Has there ever been a more remarkable game than Leeds 4, Preston 6 on Tuesday?
I think it has, Piers.
I could shoehorn a West Ham reference in there.
Do it.
West Ham 4, Bradford 5 in around 1999, I think it was. It had literally everything that game. It had penalties, it had Paolo Di Canio fighting with Frank Lampard, it had Paolo Di Canio falling on the floor, begging to be taken off by Harry Redknapp, crying on the side of the pitch to be taken off, and then being told to get on with it and then win us a penalty. It had John Moncur scoring, going mental, taking his shirt off, lobbing it into the crowd, not being back in position, and Bradford's going to score the other end. And it also had the bloke who I've name escapes me, Jamie Lawrence, that's it, with the pineapple on his head, scoring an absolute screamer for Bradford. And we were 4-2 down at one point, and we ended up winning 5-4.
I've got three.
Okay, go for it.
I once went to Wickham and saw Villa go 3-1 down and win 8-3. And there's two this year as well. Another Villa won 6-4 against Blackburn, but we weren't 4-1 up. We were 2-0 down. So I would just about say that this week's result probably has the edge on that. But Motherwell Hibs in May, 6-6, which I saw referenced today as the highest scoring draw in any top flight ever.
Wow. Even if it is the SPL. But, no, I was just thinking, because when I was watching a Champions League game on Tuesday night, and as I was actually looking at the scores coming through as well, because I had another screen open just updating, and looking at Leeds Preston just went, wow, and seeing the goals, and that was brilliant. And then you had Norwich 4, Leicester 3 sending off Matty Fry out there. Other ones as well, you had a mass brawl in
Notts County,
Peterborough, Notts County obviously winning at London Road there. So many brilliant games. It's just like, you thought, well...
Bournemouth,
yeah, I will give Bournemouth massive credit, beating Exeter 3-0 and to go second in the table.
Super. Eddie Howe is the English Mourinho.
Not just that, I've heard that he's actually going to be walking across the channel on the water in the next month.
Another good thing about the Leeds-Preston game, it had Sam Parkin scoring a hat-trick, the beast, the man who looks nothing like a footballer, end up scoring more goals than anyone in the championship the way it's going. He's a ridiculous man.
That's brilliant. we should probably do a championship stint at some point. I'm sure we will. But yeah, okay, as well as Preston's famous midweek win, there were a few games around Europe. None craps quite as spectacular as that. The group stages entered their second round. Spurs bounced back from their loss at your team to, rather convincingly, I have to say, CFFC 20 on Wednesday.
Well, convincingly in terms of the score, but the performance wasn't matched in the 4-1 victory. The penalties were something that I couldn't believe. I saw Redknapp today saying that all of them were guaranteed or spot on penalties, something like that, when one of them was a ridiculous handball. I'm not sure how it was given, but it was. The ref was very much on Spurs' side, put it that way, other than sending off, which was a sending off in Van der Vaart, who obviously has a temper on him.
Absolutely. I mean, Spurs will probably sort of look at that and go, yeah, you know, we're a proper force in Europe. Do you think there's still sort of a lot of cause for concern for them?
Oh, definitely. They're playing a team that's as green in as Europe as they are. They, you know, in the Champions League terms, anyway. They will find it. Their big game is Werder Bremen at home. If they win that, they'll probably go for a second round, because I can't see them getting anything against Inter Milan. I think they're too experienced in Europe, and they'll probably end up thrashing them away at San Siro and probably getting a good result at White Hart Lane. Their big game, well, I think they've got a difficult game against FC20 away. I think they'll find that tough. But it's definitely not. They might be very cock-a-hoop at the moment, but. I'd hold fire if I was a Spurs fan.
Especially given Inter saw a Werder Bremen 4-0 as well. I don't think any of us saw any of that, but I mean, Bremen are not a particularly bad side either. So, that's interesting times for Spurs fans. Another team who left it very late, Chris, Manchester United against Valencia.
They did. It wasn't the best game, but it certainly wasn't as bad as the commentators and much of Twitter was making out either. Yeah, Javier Hernandez with a very late goal after Federico Makeda's first touch was a lovely ball into him. First touch was superb, finish was even better. They probably just about deserved the points, I would say. There were a few names that shone for Valencia, but they weren't really up to that much. Put a lot of pressure on towards the end of the second half, and a bit of sucker punch for Man United, and it's all over.
I tell you what, though, I mean, Rangers, I didn't give them really much for hope in that group, but they beat Bursaspor 1-0 last night, coupled with their draw at Old Trafford, which wasn't pretty to watch at all. But they might just grind their way out of that league.
Yeah, huge games against Valencia now. They are capable, probably, of holding them at home just about if they have a really good night. I think away they'll probably take a bit of a beating, but it's possible, and it's in their hands, and they just have to defend their own destiny for their lives.
Bursaspor away is their big game, I feel. Man United at home, they could get possibly another draw there because the atmosphere is going to be fantastic, obviously at Ibrox, but Bursaspor away will be their biggest game.
Yeah, I watched Arsenal Partizan on Tuesday night, which I have to say was a very entertaining game, and Arsenal. Not at all convincing there either. There was obviously penalty shouts all over. Well, three penalties as well there, which was fairly crazy. And Partizan looked like a good side. Very sort of quick and willing to go at the team, and we're just undone. But once they went down to 2-1 and lost the man for a professional foul, you felt that was it. But Arsenal not convincing at all. Although Fabianski. Came away with a fair bit of restoring his reputation. Do you rate either of you rate Fabianski's keep? Because I really don't. Okay, that's oh, good lord. I think that tells you all you need to know.
No,
not really.
Do you think this is kind of like, because last season, I think Vito Minoni, the Arsenal backup keeper, had one excellent game at Fulham
away, yeah, and then he had a game against us. I think it was when we drew against 2-2, and he was abysmal. Letting a terrible free kick that came back out to Carlton Cole to score, and was never seen of again, I believe.
Still there. I bang on this kid every week. Not bang on, obviously, that was very wrong. I bang on about this kid every week. Wojciech Szczesny, who I think will be a star, and I keep saying that, and I'm really hoping that Feng will play him, especially ahead of Fabianski. But we shall see. What else on that? I mean, Chris, got to say, a very routine victory for Chelsea over Marseille. They're nothing You thought they might put up a bit of resistance, but it's Chelsea at the Bridge, isn't it?
Early goal as well, and that's a real killer when you go to Stamford Bridge and you concede early. Bounce back from that defeat at Man City, and it's just as if it hasn't happened, isn't it? They really is going to be a blip for them. And routine is the word that's described now for most of their wins. I said in another podcast that we do in this very room that I think that Chelsea are going to win the Champions League this year. I see no reason to change that.
Well, let's forget they've come off two losses, because they also lost to Newcastle in the League Cup as well. So it's bounced back from two bad results from.
Another club that bounced back off bad result, Bayern Munich, beating Basel 2-1. Again, leaving it late on there. Schweinsteiger coming in late on that, and Thomas Müller diving for a penalty.
We're having that.
I love that. Müller as a player, but
Schweinsteiger scored that as well, didn't he?
That was his first goal. So it's they needed that result, but they weren't entirely convincing. Elsewhere, Christian, you picked out goal of the round, Michel Bastos
for Lyon.
Yeah,
superb. Came out to the edge of the box, and it's probably still going. It was incredible. It was a really powerful drive into the kind of the roof of the net from 20 odd yards. Apple's goalkeeper scored as well, so a bit of a personal triumph for him on a night where he conceded three goals.
Absolutely. Barcelona and Kazan, they've got a bit of, it's starting to develop a little bit of history.
It's a good team to be the bogey side for, really, Barcelona.
Absolutely. And Kazan, I saw bits of it, looked decent, although Barcelona had a brilliant opportunity to win it at the end. Iniesta, unusually for him, getting it slightly wrong in the box after a wonderful little passing move going over. Ajax holding Milan to a draw. Milan still not really got off this.
Relying on Ibrahimovic to bail them out yet again. He's in scorching form, and thank God for Milan that he is.
Yeah, they need it. It's Zlatan doing what Zlatan does. And I'm sure if James were here, he's on Europa League duty tonight. I'm sure if he was here, he'd probably be able to explain to us Spartak Moscow against Žilina and their routine 3-0 thumping.
Yep, no shots on target for Žilina.
No.
He would also, I'm sure, talk about Shakhtar Donetsk and their entirely Brazilian win, given that we were talking to him and Tim about the Brazilians in Ukraine and Russia last week.
Braga really being taught a lesson this season. I have to say.
Yeah, they are. They're not really finding their feet in the Champions League yet, are they?
Absolutely. Yeah, some big wins there, and also some testing times. The Champions League's looking rather interesting, actually, this season. Normally it takes me a little bit of time to warm to it, but this time around, I think there's enough there to keep me very interested indeed. Right, that's just about it, I think, for the podcast this week. Lee, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Any West Ham fans who've got any differing opinions to Lee? We had one question, I think, from JHBHQ asked about the Olympics, which I've got to credit him when I asked that question earlier. But if any West Ham fans have got any opinions on the Olympic Stadium, do leave us a comment on the usual place. And Lee, you're at LD Harve on Twitter.
I am indeed.
Yeah, so any questions on that, fire them his way. Or alternatively, you can twitter.com/twofootedtackle if you want to fire stuff at Chris. facebook.com/twofootedtackle if you want to become a fan of the podcast, and why wouldn't you? And just get involved with the banter there. www.twofootedtackle.com. All forms of articles from all over the world is focused on, well, most of them are written in England, but they go for all over the world, other than Seb, who lives in Holland and writes about Scotland. podcast@twofootedtackle.com if you want to drop us a line. Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next week, Liverpool special. So get your W's ready for Waskley Woy Hodgson. Any other questions you've got about the Anfield club? Are they in crisis? Are they not? How many times can you use the word crisis in a season? We'll be about to find out next week. Until then, goodbye.
Twofootedtackle.com.
I don't think they do bother at 2T anymore.
Don't they?